Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour. This is for November 3rd, 2022, in the ongoing series, year-long series of discoveries of my work. And this week, I will be talking about one of my favorite topics, and that is prime numbers. Now, a lot of people out there who are not mathematicians, they're probably already reaching for the dial, but hold on. I'm going to be putting this into a historical perspective. So, it's important, even if you do not understand about prime numbers, understanding the importance of this discovery. And also the fact that I have pushed the limits of understanding way out there. Because previously, the best thing that mathematicians could say about prime numbers is they looked like a series of unrelated lottery numbers. That was one of the expressions, or that there's no rhyme or reason to them. In fact, there was a prize given, called the Field Prize, to some alleged top mathematicians for proving that the prime numbers are random, meaning that there are no patterns. And when you read my books, even a person who's not mathematically inclined can see the incredible patterns in the prime numbers. It's just unbelievable. But not only patterns, but the prime numbers form mathematical systems. Now, let me just go into this a little bit before I start on the whole topic of prime numbers. A mathematical system, let's just start out from the beginning. Let's start out with counting to 10. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You could count on your left hand, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Your other fingers on your right hand. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, left hand. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 on the right hand, and that gives you 10 digits, and that's counting to 10. But how do you go above that? Is there a number system that allows you to count higher than the number of fingers on your hands? And of course there is, and that brings in the value of zero. So when you say 10, the number 10, 10. You have a zero in there that's a placeholder, and so you start out again counting 1, 2, 3, but instead of 1, 2, 3, it's in the tens position, so it's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, because the digit, the counting digit, is in the tens position. And then you can have 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, etc. And this is what we call the base 10 number system. And so you could have a base 3 number system, or base 16 number system, or a base 8, which is used in computing because it's related to the zeros and ones. And there's a number system that's just based on 0 and 1. It's called the binary number system. So you have all of these different number systems. But the issue here is that prime numbers do not depend on the configuration of digits that we give to it. Prime numbers can be understood by just apples on a table. If you have 6 apples on a table, you can put them in 3 rows and 2 columns, or 2 rows and 3 columns. So there's a different way of dividing them up. And for example, if you had the number 20, or let's say the number 30, you could have two rows with 15 in each row, or you could have 5 rows with 6 in each row, etc. So anyway, there's different ways that you could divide these up into patterns, and that would not depend on the digital form or the number format that you gave to this set of apples. The prime numbers would be a number like 7, where there's no way to divide these up in rows and columns except one row with 7 in a column. And that's the original definition of prime numbers. This is the textbook definition, and I'm going to show you why that definition has been the main reason why prime numbers have remained basically unknown for thousands of years. And also, depending the base 10 number system is what we use in most of mathematics. So you have constants like pi or the letter e or other constants, for example, the gravitational constant, which is a physical constant based on the force of gravity, that they are based on these numbers are given to us in a textbook in the form of base 10 numbers. Numbers like pi or e, which is the basis of exponentials, etc., and logarithms. There's natural logarithms, there's base 10 logarithms, etc. But these are all based on the base 10 number system. And what I'm going to tell you is that the base 10 number system has been the biggest hindrance to understanding prime numbers, along with just the fact that we attribute numbers to these things in the first place. And so what I did is I went out and I developed a brand new number system. It's a different way of writing numbers, and it's needed to understand the prime numbers. But the point I'm getting at here is that in mathematics, there are things, there are number systems, there are algebras, which most people have taken algebra like in high school to learn how to balance an equation. If you add 2 to one side of the equation, you have to add 2 to the other side of the equation to make it balance. And if it's an inequality, the same thing. If one side of the equation is greater than the other side of the equation, then if you add 2 to both sides of the equation, then that inequality is maintained. Okay, so anyway, there's algebra. Then there's advanced forms of algebra like matrix algebra, abstract algebra, and these are more complicated forms of algebra. And what I'm going to tell you is not only are the prime numbers able to be calculated directly in groups, but they actually form mathematical structures in algebras. And they have properties like closure, they have properties like reciprocity, they have properties like symmetry, and many mathematical properties. And nobody in a million years would ever imagine that prime numbers have any kind of properties at all. Like I said, the biggest advancement prior to my work was that there was no pattern of any kind at all. They were simply random. And people won prizes claiming they had proven this. Okay, so let's go back to the early Greeks. And you can think of this in, say, military terms, where the troops would be in rows and columns. And so say you had a certain number of rows and a certain number of columns, but one soldier was sick one day. So now you wanted to regroup your soldiers in a manner so that they were still all in neat rows and columns. But let's say, imagine you had a group of soldiers, like 20 soldiers. So you would have 4 rows and 5 deep to have your little platoon of soldiers. And say one soldier was sick, that leaves you with 19, it's a prime number. And the Greeks were baffled by this. They go, well, there are these numbers which you cannot fit into rows and columns, but only one row with that same number of soldiers in a single column. You cannot form rows and columns other than just one row. And so they called them prime numbers. And so they were somewhat baffled by these. And there were some basic questions. Well, how do you find these prime numbers other than just by brute force? And once you find them, are there going to be more? What are their properties? And then the issue would come up that you would find a prime number, and then the next prime number might be very far away, and sometimes it was only 2 away, like the prime numbers 29 and 31. We're only 2 numbers apart, 2 digits apart. And then sometimes there would be the next prime number, like 37, which would be 6 apart. And then you would have, and this would go on and on. And so as you got up to bigger and bigger prime numbers, the spacing between the prime numbers got bigger and bigger, but every now and then there would be a twin prime pair. A number like, just imagine, I'll give you an example, 521 and 523. It's a twin prime pair, and it's out in the middle. It's a large number, but these twin prime pairs keep showing up and showing up. Well, are there an infinite number of those? Are there an infinite number of prime numbers? How many are there? Do they end at some point? How do you get up to very immense, large numbers, and you don't find any prime numbers for a very long time, and all of a sudden there's a twin prime pair, two of them together? How does that happen? And so anyway, they were a mystery. They were a mystery to the Greeks, but they did form a very interesting proof, and I'm not going to go through it here, but they were able to prove that there was an infinite number of prime numbers. A very interesting, and it was one of the first proofs by what is called in mathematics contradiction. You assume something, and if you find a contradiction, then that disproves the assumption. And so in the case of prime numbers, they assumed that there was a finite number of prime numbers and that there were no more. And in that proof, they found one more prime number. There was a way to find one more prime number. And so they said, okay, no matter how many prime numbers you find, there will always be one more. And here's how you prove it. A very interesting proof. But anyway, so the ancient Greeks knew that there was an infinite number of prime numbers, but they didn't know that there was an infinite number of twin prime pairs, or an infinite number of prime numbers that differed by 4 or 6 or any other even number, because the prime numbers are always odd. And so then they started quibbling over little things, like, for example, the number 3 is a classical prime number, but is 2 a prime number? And so there are people that argue that the number 2 is not a prime number. And there are people that'll tell you definitely 1 is not a prime number. And then there are other people that'll tell you, well, for absolutely sure, 0 and 1 are not prime numbers, when in fact, they are prime numbers by the strict mathematical, simplistic definition of prime numbers. Okay, so at any rate, what I did is from the time I was in high school, I was studying this problem when I first became aware of it. And so I tried my own methods of trying to understand the prime numbers, etc. And then I read, and eventually I taught mathematical analysis at the university level. I took mathematical analysis as a course in college. And when I was teaching university level mathematics, mathematical analysis, one of the courses that I taught. And what happened in around the mid-1800s, there were some so-called advancements. And there was the mathematician called Euler who developed an equation with a very simple mathematical trick, developed an equation relating on the left side products of prime numbers and on the right-hand side the sum of prime numbers. And so it was a very simple equation. It's now called the Golden Rule. And then there was a mathematician whose name is Riemann, who came across, and one of the most famous developments, and I'll talk about this in history, was that he developed an equation that was related to prime numbers and this Euler equation, but he brought it into complex plane using complex numbers, a very difficult problem to even imagine or understand for mathematicians. So even getting your hands around this or getting your brains around this is very difficult. And so anyway, he came up with a solution that depended on some mathematical solutions related to prime numbers. And I'm not even going to go into detail on this, but it turns out that his problem was never solved. And so around the turn of the 19th centuries, there was a famous lecture that was given by Hilbert, a mathematician, and he gave a series of mathematical problems that would set the stage for the 20th century. And the biggest unsolved problems really related to prime numbers were the Riemann hypothesis and the question, are there an infinite number of twin primes? And conjecture known as the Goldbach conjecture, which says that every even number is the sum of at least two prime numbers. Now, if you look up in any mathematical journal today or reference, you'll probably not see the last two listed, but in Hilbert's original listing, he grouped those three problems together. And so the whole issue with the Riemann hypothesis was to understand the prime numbers. In other words, to be able to predict them. And then if you can predict prime numbers, you can make certain analytical statements about them. And so how would you determine the number of primes, then twin primes, etc.? So this all goes together. But the other two prime number problems, the twin prime problem and the Goldbach conjecture problem, are typically not listed with the Riemann hypothesis when you look at the Hilbert list of 23 unsolved mathematics problems in the year 1900. But the point is that this set the tone of mathematics up into the present day. And so the Riemann hypothesis is looking for a mathematical analysis type of solution. But the people today, even the experts in the field, will tell you that it's not going to be solved with mathematical analysis. So what is mathematical analysis? Mathematical analysis is, I guess, in a simplistic form, it's using statistics to and general analysis of numbers and number systems, etc., and this includes the prime numbers, to try and make determinations about them. For example, there are mathematical formulae which give, say, the average density of prime numbers. But as you get out to huge numbers, and by the way, huge numbers are not infinite. They're not even close to infinite. The biggest computer-generated prime numbers are only teensy-weensy compared to infinity, which brings up the topic of computerized calculation of prime numbers. Now, there are dozens and dozens of formulations of people trying to form some kind of mathematical formula to simplify the prime numbers, and none of them work. I've developed a system that I show in my book, Principles of Prime Numbers. That's the first book of the three-set series that are about to be published. One is already published. And so my books are called Calculate Primes. The second one is Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, which is breaking the encryption codes, and the book describing that, and the encryption industry, which is very corrupt. And then the third book that is available to the public is called Principles of Prime Numbers. And it gives the first physical interpretation of the generator function, which I give in my Calculate Primes book. So at any rate, what's happened with modern computing is that they can, by brute force, determine prime numbers. So the way they do it, essentially, it's a little more complicated than this, but you take a big number and you divide it by 2, by 3, by 7, by 5, I'm sorry, by 7, by 11, by 13, and you divide it by all the prime numbers up to the square root of that number. And if you do not find factors, then that number is prime. But when you get up to numbers that are huge, then this process takes a very long time. So they try and shorten it by using mathematical formulas that give you a high probability of finding a prime number. For example, the Mersenne primes, which is related to 2 to a factor plus 1. And so anyway, that's if you don't understand that, that's fine. But it's just a simple formula to give you a high probability that the number is going to be prime. And so you don't have to search for all the numbers. But the problem is, if you, say, find a big prime number, then you have not discovered all the prime numbers up to that point. You're missing lots of prime numbers. So, okay, big deal, whoopee-doo. You get your 15 minutes of fame in a publication. Oops, the biggest next prime number was found. But literally, it tells you nothing. It doesn't tell you anything about the prime numbers. It doesn't tell you about all the prime numbers you missed. It's just a big number. So it's really, as they say, where's the beef? Or it's a non-story. It's a story that is a non-story. Because as soon as they get done announcing it, then they have to turn on the supercomputers to try and find the next one, which is going to take more computing power and more years, etc. And so it does not give you understanding. The other way that they use in to try and find prime numbers is very similar, but they use them for mathematical methods like encryption codes. And I've talked about this before. I'm not going to go into that tonight so much because I'm talking more about the history of my discoveries. But getting back to 1900, the Hilbert problems, one of them being the Riemann hypothesis, subproblems, are there an infinite number of twin primes? And then the Goldbach conjecture, every even number is the sum of two prime numbers. Is that true or not? And these problems can be related. Now, there's a wonderful book that is called Prime Obsession by John Derbyshire. And so it's a great book, and it's one that I like to refer to because people will criticize me and say, well, have you solved the Riemann hypothesis? And no, and I don't care to, because if my work were known about during the time of Riemann, he would have never proposed the Riemann hypothesis because there would have been all of the structure necessary to understand the prime numbers. The Riemann hypothesis is, and also in John Derbyshire's book at the very end, he says that even if the Riemann hypothesis is solved and it's either true or false, even if it's true, it will not tell you how to calculate and determine prime numbers. And so it's really misunderstood even by mathematicians. And so when people talk about my work, say on the internet, the trolls are out there immediately to jump on it, but not the mathematicians. Just like NASA, the mathematicians are quiet as a church mouse. But interestingly enough, the same mathematicians have proclaimed in public that mathematical analysis will never resolve the major outstanding problems related to prime numbers. So what I did is I went directly at understanding the prime numbers. And a little bit of history on this. For my entire life, since I was in high school, I had been working on this. As I say, I understood mathematical analysis. I taught mathematical analysis at the university level. And I realized very soon that mathematical analysis would not give solutions to understanding the prime numbers. So I set about on some different paths. And then at one point in my career, I said, I'm going to take this problem, I'm going to put it on the shelf, and because of my belief in the divine creator and that prime numbers are the essential building blocks of all number systems, I made two assumptions. Number one was that the solution to understanding the prime numbers was very simple and everybody had been overlooking it. Something so simple that nobody really, in all of the complications in the Riemann hypothesis and everything else, they were simply missing the boat. And the same with mathematical analysis, that with all of the complex mathematical analysis and 150 years of published papers, never ever getting close to really solving the issue. So the solution was simple, but it was very subtle. And I made these assumptions because of my understanding of living in nature, of being in the Canadian wilderness for 10 months living outside and understanding that nature is infinitely complex, but when you pull back that veil, it's very simple. So I made these assumptions and I put my work on the shelf and I went away for a number of years until I'd forgotten everything that I knew about prime numbers, because I had to come back with a very fresh start. And then one day, it was a bright sunny day in the summertime, I remember it well, I said, I'm just going to go into the middle of the prime number table. I'm not going to start with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 numbers, the 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, 19. I'm not going to start with the original early prime numbers. I'm going to dive right into the middle of the prime number table and see what happens. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was like amazing discovery. And then a second major discovery I made while I was on an airplane trip. I was with friends and we were divided with seats. And so I was in a different seating all by myself. And I was tired, so I went to sleep and I had the prime numbers on my mind and I dreamt a solution. I dreamt that solution and I woke up and it was like, you know, when you're coming out of a dream and you're forgetting your dream. And I always have paper and pencil handy, so I have in my pocket. So I took out my paper and I started writing down my dream. And that became the basis of the book, Principles of Prime Numbers. And I dreamt the solution because this is something I did when I was in college, when I was learning physics, studying mathematics. I would go to bed at night with a math problem or a physics problem, and by morning I would have it solved. So I was used to doing this with my subconscious mind because it can work very clearly, very succinctly, and only concentrate on that one thing. And as I woke up on this airplane, I started writing it down and it made perfect sense. But when I made the original discovery by looking into the middle of the prime number tables, I said, this is it. And so I went over to a bar by the water, and I sat there and I had the waitress serve drinks to me as I worked on this, and it took me 6 days of steady work to work this out. And eventually, this became the 7-part problem, which I talk about in my books. There is the rigorous proof has 7 different parts. And this was the veil. When I realized this, I realized that this is what everybody had been missing, and that the base 10 number system was the culprit, that the prime numbers had to be understood in a different number system. So I invented a brand new number system. And that was allowed prime numbers to be exemplified and part of the basic number system, and that was the problem. In the base 10 number system, the prime numbers are not part of the number system. So I invented a brand new number system. I understood the relationship between the prime numbers. I generated a formula for directly generating the prime numbers in groups, where you would put in 0, you would then use what I call the Mekani generating function. You'd put in 0, that would generate the first prime number 1. Then you would put those 2 numbers in and they would generate the next prime numbers. And you'd put those numbers into the generator function. Those would generate the next group. And as you did this process, taking the prime numbers you had already generated, putting them back into the equation, they would generate a bigger group. And very quickly, the groups of prime numbers became very large. And so this was the basis for understanding prime numbers. And then the visual interpretation is what I dreamt on the airplane, became part of the visual presentation of the generator function. Very important. So those are the parts that are available to the public now. The calculate primes is the initial work, the initial discovery with the generator function. Then I talk about snowflakes and galactic formation, and I talk about DNA and the building blocks of life being a similar structure, how the nucleotides are basic structures and building blocks of DNA, and it's a similar process. And that corresponds with genetic genome signatures, characterization, etc., but from a mathematical point of view. And so at any rate, in my progress with prime numbers, now I'm at the point where I've developed mathematical systems and relating it to what is known in mathematics as group theory. And so it's very interesting because every prime number now is not just a number all by itself. It has a whole series of ancestors that go back to 1 and 0. And every prime number has a series of offspring that goes out to infinity. And the patterns for these developments are in my work. So anyway, this is the thing that mathematicians have been looking for literally thousands of years. And I have two more books coming out. Volume 2 and Volume 3 of Principles of Prime Numbers will be coming out soon. But when you see the tables of the prime numbers and you see the interesting, the symmetry, you see the reciprocity. What does reciprocity mean? It means that if you can generate a future prime number from a current prime number, then you can take that future prime number and generate the prior prime number. That's reciprocity. Closure is a system of mathematics. It's a property of mathematics in a system in which all of the numbers that you have in the system, if you add them together or multiply them together, end up in the same system of numbers. It's called closure. And all of the prime numbers, as they're being developed in these groups, all of those groups have group properties of closure, symmetry, reciprocity, and wave patterns. And it's something that nobody ever imagined before, that the prime numbers occur in waves, just like waves, water waves on the ocean or on a lake, where you have waves which are interacting with other waves and eventually infinite number of waves. And a very interesting property of prime numbers is that if you start at certain, I've discovered what were known, I call them magic numbers, but if you start at a magic number, these are very specific numbers on the number line, if you start at a magic number, all of the prime numbers to the right form a series which are reflected across that number to the left side. In other words, the prime numbers have symmetry across certain numbers, and then you can start out at any number of these magic numbers. You can go way out into the number tables or multiples of the magic numbers and find the symmetries where you go to the right, you see the same pattern as going to the left. Amazing symmetries. And this helps you solve some of these underlying problems of math that I was just talking about. So anyway, this is a very important work. And of course, it is not recognized, just like my work with electromagnetism and space and comets, etc. It's amazing how this information is being kept from the public, because every school student should be learning about prime numbers. But, of course, that would allow logic and reasoning and understanding into the classroom, and they simply don't want that. They want the new math where nothing makes any sense. You move this over there, and you move this up here, and you come up with a number. And I don't know how many parents I've talked to that go and they go, I don't understand this new math at all. And I said, not only do you not understand it, but your students do not understand it, and that's the entire point. The entire point of new math is to take logic and reasoning out of mathematics, the most logical subject on the planet. And interestingly enough, they've taken, at the Harvard Law School, they have taken logic and ethics out of the curriculum so that lawyers, the top lawyers, supposedly top lawyers in the country, no longer learn logic and reasoning and ethics. Now, when you learn ethics, one of the things you learn about is called natural law. There are certain things that are just inherent, and this is for an animal, a bug, a monkey in the jungle, or a human being, but natural law is something that the animals in the jungle don't really recognize or understand, and the whole issue with a human being is that we're above the level of animals. And that's what Carl Sagan wanted everybody to believe, is that man was simply another monkey, just a little bit smarter monkey than the one out there in the jungle. Your brain just grew a little more, so there you were smarter. Broca's brain was a little smarter than the one out there in the jungle, and that's all you are. That's all you'll ever be. You're just an animal, just like the monkey. In fact, there is music for youth today that says exactly that, that you're just a monkey, and so, like on the Discovery Channel, that's exactly what it says. And so this is a permeating our youth with this idea that they're just a monkey. It negates the soul, the human intellect, the human spirit, creativity of man, the understanding that we live in a divine universe that's created and we're the central part of that. All of this is destroyed by Carl Sagan's atheistic teachings in the Cosmos series, which are then promulgated through the school systems. Horrific, horrific destruction of the reality of the human species. Now, I also talked about this in a previous show in this series, but the prime numbers were being used by the world elite to plan nefarious operations such as 9/11, prime number, and for example, the Fukushima tsunami was a man-created tsunami and also coordinated with explosives that blew up the towers at the Fukushima power plant and caused tremendous pollution, etc. But the reason that was given in the background in the intelligence communities for the Fukushima, basically the destruction of that power plant, is because they were creating fuel that then was being used in Iran for a nuclear program, a nuclear weapons program. That's what the allegation was. And Japan was selling this nuclear fuel to Iran. And so instead of negotiating or finding another means, they blew up these power plants, which polluted the entire Pacific Ocean. And now the uranium, cesium, strontium, the residue pollution from those events is actually polluting the water systems in the United States. And they've found these, in some cases, very high levels in the water systems, in the groundwater. So it's a issue that has to be contended with. But the point is, relative to this discussion of prime numbers, is those dates were picked because they are prime numbers. And the difference between them being six. And the people that were doing this were using prime numbers because they thought they were totally unrelated. They thought mathematically these numbers are unrelated. They have nothing to do with each other. And so I come out with my work on prime numbers showing that they're very related. They belong to very very sophisticated mathematical groups. They follow the mathematics of group theory and group functions and groups in general. Group is a mathematical structure. And as a result, these people became very angry. In fact, one of the radio shows I did, a number of radio shows I did on the use of prime numbers as planning dates that had been used in the past for major events like 9/11, like I said, Fukushima, and other major events. And so it threw water onto these people and exposed them for using prime numbers, and they considered them like in a secret society, some kind of secret numbers. And that's what they were doing. And I was able to expose that and show that these numbers are actually related, which threw water on their fire. Now, there are some other mathematical techniques that I've been incorporating. I'm not going to talk about them in this lecture, but if people have read some of my work, but I'll be releasing this in the upcoming books, Volume 2 and Volume 3, which deal with some of the unsolved problems of mathematics. And I also take the dozens of other mathematical formulae. There are Einstein primes, there are Mersenne primes, There are dozens and dozens of classifications of prime numbers based on some formula that somebody developed trying to predict prime numbers, and none of these formulas work, but people still refer to them. And the tendency is to maybe give you a more a higher probability of finding prime numbers, but nobody has come up until my work, nobody has been able to come up with a formula for calculating prime numbers because they didn't understand prime numbers. Then now I fully understand prime numbers, and I'm pushing the plow forward, plowing new ground on the whole issue of prime numbers. Very important. And also, this should be studied in the schools. These should be major mathematical topics. And also with people working on advancing, because there's one thing I'm aware of at this point is that there are still discoveries to be made relative to the prime numbers. When I published the Calculate Primes book in 2007, I thought that that was really amazing breakthrough. And now I consider it to be just a very small stepping stone to the point that I'm at now. And I've made major discoveries relative to the prime numbers, the prime number patterns, and the extension of this all the way out to infinity. And that's one of the important things, because if you can't extend these rules out to, literally out to infinity, then it will not solve some of these major mathematical problems, which require you to understand prime numbers, not out to just simply big numbers. And that's where mathematical analysis breaks down. They always get out to very big numbers, the probabilities go down, and they never can resolve them. And they go through all kinds of hoops. They jump through hoops to try and make these valid or make it meaningful. But they always arrive at the same conclusion that statistically, you're simply not going to understand the prime numbers. Okay, now I'm going to relate the prime numbers to some other physical processes that we see in nature. For example, on one of the poles of Saturn, interestingly enough, there is a hexagonal pattern that you can see. And it was very strange the first time this was photographed. And then people really didn't understand. And then later spacecraft went back and it's a pattern that exists at one of the poles of Saturn. So the question is, what's really going on here? And so I related it to two things that I work with, the weather work and the discharge of the vertical electric field, which creates cyclonic storms. And then also understanding the Great Red Spot of Jupiter is a cyclonic storm. Now, cyclonic storms on Earth don't last long because they short out the electrical currents that are driving them short out to the land of Earth. But say you had an ocean of that completely surrounded the Earth and there were no land masses at all visible above the ocean. The tornadoes and the hurricanes could keep going and going and going, especially the hurricanes, because there's no land to short them out, to short circuit the electrical connection with the ionosphere. And so that's the case with the Great Red Spot. It's simply a hurricane that there's no land below it to short out the electrical discharge. So at the pole of Saturn, you have one central cyclonic storm surrounded by six cyclonic storms, and that is a prime number pattern. It's, for example, if you took a nickel, a coin, let's just say a coin, and you put it on a table and you took six more of the exact same coin and put it around there, all of the coins would be touching and it would make a hexagon, a six-sided figure. And so what's going on at the pole of Saturn is you have it, of course, is discharging the solar capacitor, so you have a very strong current coming into Saturn, which is connecting to its atmosphere. And you can see these same patterns on planet Earth. If you go, there's wind mapping programs that you can go online, and they show wind patterns. And if you flip the Earth so that you're looking at either the South Pole or the North Pole, primarily the South Pole, This is where it happens more frequently. But you will see that exact same seven storm pattern. The storm in the middle with six pattern storms around it, and it forms a hexagon. And so that's what's going on at Saturn. Is it's a naturally occurring seven storms. And why seven storms? Because they're all the same size. If the storms on the outside were smaller, you might be able to get seven or even eight storms moving around the central storm, but that's not the case. They're all receiving the same approximate electrical discharge to drive the storm, so they're the same size, so that gives you a pattern of seven. And so that's an interesting example of prime numbers. Another interesting example of prime numbers is the snowflake. A snowflake starts with a little speck of dust in a cloud system, and there's water vapor, and then the small particle, because it's in a non-uniform electric field, discharges and causes a charge to form on the small particle, and then the six-sided snowflake forms. And it's a very subtle thing, but you can perform these in a laboratory. You can take a pin needle, this has been done in a laboratory, in a vacuum chamber, and you vaporize water, and then put a voltage on the head of the pin, and it'll form a six-sided snowflake every time. And so it's a method of nature forming a very beautiful structure, a snowflake, using prime numbers. So I've got a question that I ask. This I ask in the Diamond Principle and also in the Calculate Primes book. I talk about this. If you were a race, advanced civilization on the far side of the universe, would you discover the same principles regarding the prime numbers? And the answer is, of course, yes, you would. If you were an intelligent species. And I'll also say that it would be rather humorous to a alien race that came to Earth and looked at us that we use a base number, a base 10 number system, because that's the number of fingers we have. And so if we had, say, eight fingers, would we use a base 8 number system? And really, the base 10 number system, based on the counting of your fingers, 10 fingers, is really the biggest hindrance to understanding the prime numbers. And so the point is that the prime numbers and the understanding of the prime numbers and the 7-part rigorous proof would all be the same on the far side of the universe or from another star system. And it would be the basis of all numbers. So the number system that I developed would be the number system that would be used universally, not necessarily the binary number system that's used in computing. So the number system is the biggest limitation to really understand the building blocks of all of our number systems, the prime numbers. Let me give you an example now of a magic number and a prime number. So 7 is a prime number, and there's a magic number, which is 30. Now, I've talked before about the basic definition of prime numbers. It's a number that is only divisible by 1 and itself. That's the standard textbook definition of prime numbers, and what I've told people is that's an incorrect definition. There's a more sophisticated definition, and that is simply that, very simply, the only numbers that can be prime numbers are numbers added to or subtracted from magic numbers, which are numbers with very special properties. And if you add a prime number to a number that is one of the magic numbers, you will get a prime number in that group. And so that's a very important thing to understand. And I think that's probably what kept many mathematicians from understanding the prime numbers, because they didn't understand it in pieces. You have to understand the prime numbers in pieces and not as a string of numbers starting from 1 and going out to infinity. You have to understand the prime numbers in groups, And then you take those groups of prime numbers, you put it back in the generator function, and that creates the next group of prime numbers, which gives you another larger group, which has closure, reciprocity, symmetry, wave-like nature, etc. And then you have the situation where one group of prime numbers generates the next group. And that means that a prime number or a twin prime pair, for example, has a whole series of ancestors that go back to 0 and 1 because you start this process with 0 and 1. So it's a very interesting process, a very interesting development, something that in mathematics nobody was had any idea that this existed, as they were often somewhat never-never land working on mathematical statistical analysis of prime numbers, which was never in a million years going to solve any of the major outstanding problems of prime numbers. And so once you understand prime numbers, now you can start doing other things. Now, I'll talk a little bit about the breaking of RSA codes. Back in the day, some Harvard University mathematicians made some calculations, and they determined that there was it would be extremely difficult to calculate certain large prime numbers. And if you took two prime numbers and you multiplied them together, that would give you an extremely large number, but it would be very hard for an individual on the street or a computer, even a computer savvy person. It would take them a very long time using brute force computer techniques to determine if that big number, that product of the two prime numbers, to determine if it was prime or not, and to determine the two prime factors. So a company grew around this concept called RSA. And so they developed this technique for what is known as public key encryption, based on the calculations of these Harvard mathematicians that it would be statistically impossible to break these very large codes. But what they didn't count on, what they did not plan on, was that somebody like myself would come along and create a system by which you could calculate big prime numbers very easily. And if you start out with a table of big prime numbers, then it's just child's play to break these big numbers into their factor. In fact, it doesn't matter how big the number is. It can be 10 times, it could be 1,000 times bigger than the numbers they are presenting, and you could still crack it in a matter of minutes based on the use of the generator function and my work on prime numbers. When I released that book in 2007, I was inundated with phone calls the next day, from attorneys, from engineers, from people working on secret military projects, and they all asked the same question: is the RSA code methodology broken? And I said, yes, it is. And they understood. These people understood. The military, the Navy, the Air Force, all of the secure computing went into overdrive mode, trying to patch up all of the places where they had security breaches. And shortly thereafter, Michael Chertoff, who was the head of Homeland Security, got up on a podium and he said, all of our secure computing is broken. We don't know how bad it is and we don't know how to fix it, because they had been putting these RSA type encryption, public key encryption systems in military satellites, in software, in hardware. And because of the compartmentalization of computing, they didn't even know where any of these fixes or these implementations, they didn't know where they were. And so overnight, and of course I knew this when I released the information, and I knew that there would be backlash, but that's why I pre-sold the book and made sure it was mailed all around the world before I actually released the book. But yes, it had a devastating effect on computer encryption. But the problem is that the NSA and the CIA, the main people who break into your computer or business computers, etc., they have the they don't want to change these encryption code methodologies because they would have to retool and actually sell real encryption code systems to the public, and that's something they won't do. So the companies that are producing encryption codes, firewalls, etc., are producing basically garbage techniques. Some of the companies have moved on to what are known as elliptical techniques, which do not use prime numbers, etc. But at any rate, there's quite a rich history involved with the work, my work on prime numbers. And so the next two volumes, Volume 2 and Volume 3 of Principles of Prime Numbers, most of the work is done on these. It's simply a matter of organizing them into a publishable form. And that's a lot of work. And of course, I'm busy with a lot of other aspects of my life, with the companies that I have, etc., the water filter company, with other things that are going on in the background. And so those books hopefully will be out in maybe the next 6 months. It's a big project. It's a lot of work. And publishing books, and of course, they will be out in e-format. I also want to talk a little bit about the DNA issue, where the building blocks of systems respond very similarly to the building blocks of the prime numbers in the mathematical world. And so I've already mentioned this, that you take the nucleotides of DNA, the proteins, etc., and you start to build them like a set of building blocks. And so the DNA on the far side of the universe is the same as the DNA here. And so you'll find that biological constructs, whether they're mineral-based, whether they're plant-based, whether they are water-based, whether they are based on some other biological format that we're not familiar with, these structures are the same. So we're going to see them here. Of course, we live on a water planet, so our biological systems are based on water. At any rate, a very interesting group of topics, but necessary to use an entire program here to talk about the prime number work and what's been come in the past and what's coming in the future. Remember my web pages. This is the only source of income I have to support all this work. The radio show, I pay for my own airtime, etc. Go to the web pages jmccsci.com and jmccwaterfilters.com. Once again, this is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.